Hello, greetings, welcome to episode 5 of the podcast. I'm here with my sidekick.
Hello!
It's David Wetnall.
It is.
How are you?
I'm alright, how are you?
Very well. So, let's start. Last weekend, we watched the Riga Masters.
We did.
Which was great.
It was alright.
Eased us in into the new season. I put a little bet on Michael Holt each way at 125-1.
You lucky bugger.
So he got all the way to the final. And
quid's in.
It's a nice little earner for me. But he's been playing really well recently, hasn't he?
Yeah, we did quite well in the World Championships.
Beat
Robbo.
He's beating all the top players because his first round match was against Selby. And I thought if he can beat him, he's going to get to the final.
Oh.
And he did. And since he's been working with Griff...
Terry Griffiths.
He's been keeping a lid on all his aggression, hasn't he?
Oh, Horty. You've got to keep a lid on that aggression there. You explode too violent.
You're too violent.
Too violent. Oh, keep it nice and calm. Oh, this. Horty. You're the hitman, but you've got to keep a lid on it, man. You're too violent. Raymond, you're too violent.
Yeah, I'm Terry Griffiths.
Terry Griffiths, the Welsh wizard.
Maybe he gives him sort of drowsy drugs so it calms him down a bit.
I think Terry Griffiths sounds like he's on the drowsy drugs.
Oh, I'm a bit sad, really.
It's like he's fighting a Mogadon.
Oh,
I'm fighting the Mogadons. Trying to stay awake. Oh, if he carries on playing like this, I'm going to fall asleep.
Yeah, but obviously beaten by Robbo in the final, but, you know.
There's no shame in that.
There's no shame in that, Holty. I think also another talking point of the tournament was Darren Morgan at the age of 50.
They thawed him out, put him back on the tour.
Yeah, got a wild card through to the tournament.
Yeah.
And got all the way to the semi-final.
Well, at his age, we're lucky to get a semi.
But that's pretty amazing. Like, he must be buzzing off that one.
Oh, I'm sure he is. I'm sure it was
he's not played for
a red letter day in the Morgan household.
He's not played on the tour for like 10 years.
What's he been up to?
Just he's got a snooker club and he's been playing on. He plays a few amateur tournaments. I think he won one like European Open or something, amateur tournament, and that's how he got his wild card.
He's been keeping his eye in,
keeping his hand in.
Keep your hand in.
Oh, mate. Darren.
Oh, Darren. Oh, if you carry on playing like this, you'll end up with a semi.
But can you imagine, though, like, you qualify for one of these tournaments and you fly out somewhere and you get knocked out by, like, a wild card in the first round? You'd be so gutted, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose Riga's not too bad. It's not probably
a short to China.
Flight, yeah. Well, there's India. They're playing in India at the moment, aren't they?
Next tournament's India.
Yeah, it's a long way to go for one afternoon's snooker.
Also, you'd be booking your ticket back to Blighty.
Yeah.
And you could potentially be sat next to someone you really don't want to be sat next to, like another player.
Oh, someone, your arch nemesis.
I remember Stephen Lee said on a flight back to China, he sat down and Peter Ebdon sat next to him.
Oh, that's the worst.
And apparently for the whole journey, he was trying to persuade him to become a vegan.
Yeah, you're not going to get anywhere with Piggy Lee.
Who would you least like to be sat next to on a flight back?
Oh, I don't know.
If you were a snooker player?
I don't know, there'd be some bad ones. Like, I reckon Willie Thorne would be annoying next to you. Hi there.
He'd be trying to play some bets.
Yeah, he would be trying to bet with you. Who else would be pretty bad?
I think Selby would be quite bad. He might be practicing his comedy routine.
Yeah. As the jester. Not much good at the snooker anymore, got to be the jester. You're doing like a, you know that aeroplane food. It's disgusting, isn't it? Yes. Yes, it is, Mark. You know that Andy Murray? Well, when he wins, he's British. But when he loses, he's Scottish.
That could be annoying for like 9 hours.
Oh, it's a long old gig, that.
Just stick to the snooker, so it'll be, I think.
Oh, yeah. Don't give up your day job.
So on the last podcast, we spoke about this Perfect Break film that I'd purchased off the internet. We said we were going to review it. So a couple of weeks ago, we sat down and watched it.
Oh, that
it was
an afternoon to remember.
It was substandard, to say the least, wasn't it?
Oh, I can't describe
how
terrible it was.
Well, I think at times it was so bad it veered into like good because it was so funny. Some of the dialogue was so terrible, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was almost like if you tried to write something that was deliberately bad, I don't think you could make it as bad as this was.
This is a little clip from it. This bit actually made us laugh because the dialogue was so terrible. Yeah. Have a little listen to this.
Message. Please explain. Look, I'm not 100% sure. Let me start from the... A few years ago, there was a snooker final between Robert Stevens and Ray Carter.
Yes, I remember that.
Do you remember the outcome?
Ray won?
Yes, that's true, but Robert was so far ahead, he should have won. Some people say that he folded under pressure, others say that the match was fixed between him and Ray, and others say that Ray's constant smiling put Robert off.
I see where this is going.
It's just hilarious.
That constant smiling. That really can put you off.
Can you imagine that at the World Championships?
Hey! Are you smiling at me? Smile a while. Pack it in.
So bad it was bad, wasn't it?
Oh, God. Like I said before, I can't really describe.
I mean, how bad was the guy who played the lead?
It was like... I don't know. It's like he'd never seen a film or any sort of acting happen and didn't have any idea at all. It was very, very odd. I mean, no one comes out of it with any sort of distinction. The best you could say was that, John Virgo and Jimmy White, were as themselves, appeared as themselves and weren't too bad. I mean, at one point, John Virgo and Jimmy White, they filmed it and they were supposed to be, in front of a green screen. But the green screen, they didn't have a green screen for the film, so they just hung a green cloth and they were just sitting in front of that. And they obviously didn't put anything onto it because they couldn't because it was a green cloth. It was very, very unusual.
It was bad. The main guy was just so bad, he was played the lead guy, wasn't he?
Oh, he was. I mean, it comes to something when you're getting out-acted by Jimmy White.
Yeah, most scenes he was out-acted by a snooker cue.
Very wooden.
But it was odd, though, because it came with a disc of extras, okay?
Yeah.
And it came to light that the whole film had been filmed previously with different actors, and for various reasons they'd been sacked or left by their own accord.
Yeah.
And they had to refilm the whole thing.
Well, I thought it was interesting that there was, about five of the actors just walked away from it because it was so bad. They just said...
But it's amazing that they filmed it again, because you'd think they would have realised it's not happening.
Give it up.
It's terrible.
You're never going to win that Oscar.
But I just... It's just a bit of an odd... anomaly.
Yeah, I mean, the guy... What's the name of the guy, the producer?
Len Evans, was that something?
Len Ganley. No, Len Evans. I think it was Len Evans.
Yeah.
So Len Evans is the producer, and when you watch the extras, he's he's floating around in the back, and he's sort of pally with all the actors and the director. But I can't help but thinking, what's his motivation like?
I think it's a vanity project.
I think that.
He's always dreamed of making a film.
I think he's taken early retirement and
His pension in.
Yeah, he's cashed it all in to make a film.
He's always wanted to make a film.
He's always fancied himself as a filmmaker.
And obviously, I mean, there's obviously a little bit of money gone into it because he's got Nasty Nick from EastEnders. And obviously,
he's paid Jimmy White and John Berger to appear. They must cost, a grand a day?
Yeah. But I'd love to speak to the guy and just say, what's the score?
What are you thinking, Len?
He won't speak to us now, we've panned it.
Oh, well, yeah. We won't tell him we've done that.
get him on the podcast.
Yeah. Don't listen to episode 5. There's nothing for you there.
But that's that, innit? Nothing more to be said on that heap of shit. So there's been a spate of snooker-related crimes recently.
Ooh. This calls for the snooker detective, Jack Lazowski.
Yeah, he's on the case. So first up, Joe Johnson had his VHS tape recorded over. It was the final of the 1986 World Championship. He'd saved it on tape.
It's a very serious
And
crime.
One of his sons taped over it with He-Man.
Oh, the worst.
What do you think Skeletor would have thought about that?
Why can't I join your gang?
Because you were a wimp scientist and you could be a wimp villain.
It's the sorceress, you boob. They should call you Wimplash.
You overgrown alley cat.
You pathetic pair of pitiful pinheads.
You tin-tongued dolt.
I'm talking about my patients, not my body.
Dolts? Halfwits? Bunglers?
brainless idiots. You couldn't even beat a motley group of gnomes.
Yeah, so that's what Skeletor thinks about that. I thought I was the only...
Can we just dwell on Skeletor there?
Yes.
What's the word? Digress from the snooker.
Yeah.
He's quite camp, isn't he?
Yes. Yeah, you wimp scientist!
Yes.
You boob!
He is quite camp, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. It's quite odd.
I thought I was the only person still using VHS tapes in the country. It's me and Joe Johnson.
Well, he probably just hasn't got around to updating. It's a DVD.
Is he a traditionalist?
He is. He's a Luddite, like yourself.
Next up on the Snooker Crimes list.
Snooker Crimes.
I don't know if you heard about this, but Matt Selt has been in a bit of trouble over a Twitter spat with a fan.
Careful how you say Twitter spat.
Well, he called somebody a C.
What, a clod?
Well, yeah, but worse.
The worst C.
But, yeah, and he was reprimanded by World Snooker.
Ooh,
he was fined £1,000 and he was banned from the Riga Masters, and I think he's banned from the German Masters.
Who did he call a clod?
It was just like somebody he was talking to on Twitter. Ooh. Oh, sorry, he's banned from the Paul Hunter Classic in Firth. So
it seems a bit extreme, doesn't it? I suppose.
It's a strange thing, like, because obviously they've set a precedent there, haven't they? So, like,
vulgarity.
You've got this weird, you're banned from the Riga Masters.
Yeah.
The Paul Hunter Classic and £1,000. It's almost like they've just thought, let's think of some fun.
Yeah, yeah. But well, I mean, do you think it's just that particular word, clod, they don't like?
I imagine it's one of the worst words, isn't it? Yeah. Clod. Yeah. If you call somebody a clod in a Twitter spat. That's another one, Twitter spat.
A Twitter spat, you complete Twitter spat, you clod.
But anyway, and the final crime on our list is Jimmy Michie. He was a professional a few years back. And he's been arrested for selling fake Viagra.
Can I just point out these crimes kind of went upwards in seriousness?
Yes.
We started from a very low level snooker crime, and now we're at actual real crimes.
But apparently the Viagras he was selling looked exactly like Viagra, but were totally ineffective. So police struggled to find any hard evidence.
Oh. Can you get it over the counter?
Can if you take enough of it. We've turned into Mock the Week here.
We have a bit, haven't we? Never mind.
That's it for today, for this week's Snooker Crimes.
Next week, Jack Lazowski will be back to solve more crimes. Don't have nightmares.
Have you ever had any snooker-based dreams?
I don't know, really. Probably.
Yeah.
I sleep on a snooker bed. So.
Yeah. With your feet in the pockets. A bed of balls.
Head on the cushion.
Oh,
nice. Quite nice to sleep on it. I always think, Robbo's into Games Workshop. Snooker table, the perfect.
For Warhammer.
Yeah, the perfect.
You can build
base.
Like little mountains. This is green, it's like grass, like a meadow.
Maybe that's why he's not been practicing so much recently.
Oh, Mum! Can you move my Warhammer? Oh, I need to practice, there's a tournament coming up. Yes, Neil!
Yeah.
A little snapshot there.
A little snapshot of life in the Robertson household.
He can't practice because he's got his Warhammer all over the snooker table. I think it'd be nice to sleep under a snooker table.
Ooh,
yeah. You ever been under one in the club, you know, like to retrieve a ball?
What, you get up to in the snooker club?
Yeah, but sometimes if you have to retrieve a ball or you get like your cue case
out. I thought you meant you paid for the table and just slept under it.
Just half an hour, please, love.
40 wicks.
No, but if you go under one, it's like, it's quite a calming atmosphere. It's like you feel pretty safe.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that happens under any table, but particularly under snooker table because they're big.
Yes. I just prefer to play snooker when I'm in the club.
Yeah, true. I mean, you're paying for the light.
Yeah.
I pay for him to turn the light off so I can get some sleep.
Can you just turn it off for an hour?
Turn it down in between.
Oh, dear.
Do you remember that time we weren't playing snooker and the music was so loud? We couldn't speak to each other or concentrate on anything.
Terrible.
I had to go and ask to turn the music down.
That's Riley's for you on a Friday night.
Bloody hell.
For the students.
Tried to go in for a quiet game of snooker.
We got a banging techno set.
It's like from being in Fabric.
DJ from the bus. So on the last podcast, we mentioned about how the top 16 now will be seeded into the home series and I think the German Masters. So the sort of prestige of the top 16 has been restored and the sort of motivation to get into it. So I think it's possibly now time for our new feature, the top 20. It's Top of the Pots.
Top of the Pots. Hey, it's Friday, it's 7:30, it's time for Top of the Pots. In at number 20, it's Alan Angles McManus. And at 19, it's Michael White, the Welshest man alive. At 18, it's Stephen Maguire, he's not on fire anymore. At number 17, it's Lang Wenbo, the Chinese madman. Getting into the top 16, it's Kyron Wilson. At 15, it's Goat Martin Gould. At 14, it's The Hawk, Barry Hawkins. At 13, it's The Lazy Mouse, Mark Williams. In at number 12, it's Marco Fu, the man with no nickname. And at 11, it's Gentleman Joe Perry. At number 10, it's The Rocket, Ronnie O'Sullivan. At number 9, it's Ding Junhui. At number 8, Ricky Walden, he looks like a spider. At number 7, it's The Pistol, Mark Allen. At number 6, it's The Wizard Sleeve, John Higgins. At number 5, it's Robbo. At number 4, it's Sean Murphy, the magician. He's also good at snooker. And at number 3, it's Judd Trump, the ace in the pack. He trumps everywhere. At number 2, it's Bingo, Stuart Bingham. And at number 1, your number 1 is the jester from Leicester, Mark Selby.
Oh, glad that's over.
Yeah, there really was no need to do that.
It's getting quite tight at the bottom there.
Well.
A bit like Stephen Lee's underpants. Lang Wenbo at 17. Kyron Wilson at 16. Basically, all his ranking money was from last season, so he can only really go up. He's got no money coming off from the two seasons back.
Kyron Wilson.
So he's going to go up the rankings. McManus there at 20. It'd be great if he could get back in.
Yeah.
Ronnie, he's got about 180 grand coming off this season. So he could slip right down.
Yeah.
And Bingham has got nearly all his money coming off.
Because he didn't do well last season at all, did he?
Yeah, he's got about 480 grand coming off.
So when will that start to take effect? When will they reissue the ranking?
Like? Every tournament.
Every tournament.
After every tournament, it's redone.
Yeah.
But obviously, you know, your money's coming off and 2 years behind. Yeah. So it could
he needs to start winning.
So Bingham needs to start winning. Ronnie, if he wants to stay in the top 16, he's got to start entering.
Is Ronnie taking part in anything? That's the question.
Well, you don't know, do you?
Because Kyron Wilson couldn't go to the Riga Masters, could he? A medical thing.
Yeah, but I think he's been given the all clear now.
Yeah, I think he flew to India.
Yeah, but we'll have to see what happens over the course of the season.
Yeah, it'd be interesting though. It is quite a good system, I suppose, having like a 2 year
rolling ranking,
yeah, because it gives people a chance. If you go through a bit of a barren spell, it gives you a chance to get back on top, doesn't it? Before you start to feel it in the rankings.
Yeah. But it's quite tight from 16 down to 32. It's all, you know, like around that 150 grand mark. So
yeah,
could all change by the time we get to the World Championships.
That's a long way.
Or the Masters,
the World Champs, but there's a lot of tournaments to play.
Yeah,
could be good. Could be excited. The depth of quality though is like so much better than it has been in recent years. Like you say, all the way down to 32. There's good players.
Yeah. So it makes it a bit more exciting. Better for betting as well. I don't think the bookies are that up on it.
You've been cleaning up, haven't you, mate? You've won loads just backing each way, haven't you?
Yeah. That's what you need to do, isn't it? And also, to be honest, unless I put some money on for the smaller tournament, I probably won't watch it.
Yeah.
I mean, the coverage for the Riga Masters was pretty poor on Eurosport.
Was it? Yeah. Because sometimes you just have coverage like on. You can only watch it on the World Snooker website with no commentary, can't you?
Yeah, well, that's been scrapped, that live sport thing.
Was it?
And apparently your sport are going to integrate it into their app, so you can watch like qualifiers and stuff, but it's not been rolled out yet. So unless I put money on it, I probably wouldn't have even watched it. I might have watched the final.
Yeah.
But, I mean, there's no way it would hold my interest. But, yeah. I mean...
You only care about the money. You're only in it for the money, aren't you?
Yeah. Well, you need something to make it a bit more exciting.
Loads
you pay for your entertainment.
Oh, you've paid. That's what your dad used to say to you when you were a kid, isn't it?
Yeah, I used to get coins off him to go on the little, you know, the 2p pushing machines.
Yeah.
And obviously you'd lose it all. And you'd go back sad. And he'd be like, well, you've paid for your entertainment, haven't you, dear? two hours of fun.
You've had your fun. You've paid for your entertainment. Yeah. Don't come pestering me for more money.
So, it's competition time again. Still no winners. We had one entry last week and they got it wrong. I can't even remember what the competition was last time.
No,
did you describe somebody?
Yeah, I can't remember.
Did we do one?
I don't know.
Anyway.
It's not very professional, this.
No, I'm going to make it easier this week, okay?
Okay.
So, all you've got to do is...
Have I been sacked as the describer?
Yeah, I'm sorry. So what you got to do for this competition is identify these two players from these little clips from an interview. We've distorted their voices, and you've just got to tell me the names of the two players. Okay, so have a listen.
And I felt I should have won the last two frames last night. And it makes it 9-7, which is obviously a sorry fine again. Losing those frames killed me. But losing it. The second last one last night killed me.
That's the first player. This is the second one, so...
Funny thing was, when I went out to play, the adrenaline was such, I didn't really feel the pain. But of course my hand was a bit puffy, because it swells up, Carpal Tunnel Syndrome,
Okay, so that's your two players. If you think you know who they are, you can either contact us at snookerpodcast@gmail.com or just send us a tweet.
Send us a Twitter spat.
Yeah, and we'll send you a T-shirt. We need your address and what size you want. So yeah. Hopefully that's a bit easier this week.
Yes.
I mean, nobody listens to this podcast anyway.
I don't know why we bother. That was good.
Oh, my hands are a bit puffy.
Puffy.
Should we have a listen to that bit again?
My hands a bit puffy.
Oh, somebody win this T-shirt.
I just imagine you in a sort of small room in your house during the week.
So when the rest of us, snooker memorabilia.
When the rest of us are at work.
Yes.
Doctoring the audio from snooker interviews.
Well, I've got a lot of time on my hands.
You certainly have. Is that an accurate picture of your working week?
It's sort of sifting through bad 80s snooker autobiographies for anecdotes and scouring the internet for snooker DVDs, VHSs, clips, you know, just for the discerning listeners.
It's not a life for everyone.
It's not a life for everyone. It doesn't pay very well.
But
and,
for me...
It's boring.
But for me, I like it.
I like it. You know, you've got to have a hobby.
You have. And your hobby is...
Snooker brick. Actually, I bought Dennis Taylor's autobiography. Been reading through that.
What's it called? What's the title?
Something about frames. I can't think.
You've been framed
because of his glasses.
Ah, yes. In the frame.
Something like that. I can't quite remember. I've not got it to hand. But it's difficult reading these books because I think in the 80s people were just sort of capitalising on the popularity of it and they'd rush these autobiographies out. So say somebody won the World Championships, they'd get one out quickly and they're just so poorly written. Mm. I mean...
They must all be ghostwritten.
This one was a ghostwritten by Clive Everton, so it's slightly better than some of the others. But it's sort of peppered with like quips which don't really make much sense and not very funny. And you think, that's really weird. Have a read of some of these. Silly quips.
Silly quips from autobiographies. Okay. Sweet snooker and chips is how my sisters remember me then. They underrate me. I was also partial to roast beef and trifle. I remember. And fish and chips and Kennedy's Paris buns, which were like snowballs.
What?
What does that even mean?
You sound like Colin Murray then.
Ah, Colin Murray.
Here's another one. Have a listen to this.
Have a listen to it.
You're going to read it out.
Oh, right, okay. It just starts with either. I can't do it. Okay. Like all young boys, I did my share of scrumping, especially cabbages and fruit. I even confessed to the priest once that I'd stolen Teddy Lynch's rhubarb.
Why tell us that? Who's Teddy Lynch?
Well, you know Teddy Lynch.
Dear me.
The rhubarb grower.
Apologies
for the terrible Irish accent.
Yes.
Shall I read it in Skeletor's voice?
No. Like all young boys, I did my share of scrumping, especially cabbages and fruit.
just say, please.
That one's just for us. That one's for me.
One more as well. I mean, I'm only about a chapter in as well, so I think we can keep this up.
It's got room to grow. I'd learned to play with marbles and a wooden spoon on the kitchen table, using upturned cups as pockets. We lost many handles that way. John Spencer also learned to play with marbles, while Steve Davis practiced with coloured beads. Oh, how dull.
So there'll be more of those in future podcasts, you lucky listeners.
Something to look forward to. I'll work on improving the
the Dennis Taylor accent.
I need you to work on your Dennis Taylor accent.
So, do you follow any players on Twitter?
I follow a few. I follow Willie Thorne. Yes. He's usually quite good for a laugh.
He is.
I think, because I saw him the other day and he posted something, like just a picture of some shoes. So someone's obviously bummed him, like, a few hundred quid.
It wasn't the one about Land Rover or something?
Range, yeah, something like, if anyone wants to give me a free Land Rover, that'd be great. And he just got, obviously, not got any, got short shrift with that. So I saw this funny thing the other day. He'd posted this picture on Twitter of a woman and Brian McFadden, you know, at Westlife. And he just wrote next to the picture, like, "Who's this with my wife?" Question mark, exclamation mark. Obviously, it's a bit of a joke, like, you know, it's Brian McFadden. And then Brian McFadden had replied to that tweet, saying, "It's me, Willie." As a, again, just continue on the joke. But then Willie takes it one step too far because he replies to that and just says, "Correct answer." he was genuinely sort of like.
I recently read Willie Thorne's autobiography.
Yeah.
My God, it is a sorry tale.
Is it?
The whole book is just like how his life is just so terrible and it spirals out of control and he loses everything, like absolutely everything. And literally any money coming in, he just goes straight on gambling. Like, you wouldn't believe how much he blew on gambling. But like, I don't know.
Gambling, you said then? Gambling. You put loads of face makeup on and go to bookies.
Oh, it's just devastating book.
Oh.
And then he finally gets it together and has a stroke during like an after dinner speech.
Jeez.
Honestly, it's just, if you want to feel good about your life, read that book.
So you can go like, well, things are bad. At least I'm not Willie Thorne.
Yeah.
Poor old Willie. Wish him all the luck in the world, mate. Be lucky. Hey, Willie, be lucky.
It's funny though with Willie Thorne, because, you know, he goes on about being Mr. Maximum.
Yeah.
And it's all about him making so many maximum breaks. He only actually made one maximum break in tournament.
Yeah.
You're talking about gilding the Willie.
Gilding the Willie. There we go.
But, I mean, I bet most of the top players nowadays have made more maximums in practice than Willie has.
Yeah, probably.
Because he's always going on, I've made 190 whatever it is in practice. Yeah. I reckon all the top players have made more than that.
Probably.
I don't know. But there's a lot of professionals have not made maximums in tournament play. Or ever.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's quite surprising, you'd think.
I suppose the difference is when you're in tournament play, the circumstance is the circumstance and you've got to play it. Whereas if you're in practice, you can just set the balls up as soon as you're not on a black, just re-rack and go again. Like, do you know what I mean? You can just keep practicing until you get the perfect frame to play.
Apparently, Willie Thorne said the only way he could get interested in practicing was to try and make a maximum.
Yeah.
Because he'd just get bored.
Yeah.
I can understand that.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's whether he would smash the reds up and then go from there, or whether he'd play a proper
break and then try and
play for all blacks.
Yeah.
So if you got a difficult, you know, you put a red and you should really go for a blue, you just come in and out of board, go back on the black.
Yeah.
Just try to stay on the black.
Yeah. Well, I suppose you may as well when you're practicing because, you know, you got nothing to lose, haven't you?
But he made a lot of maximums against Gary Lineker. Apparently, Gary was a brilliant player. Like, he was knocking.
Yeah, I've heard that. He was a decent player.
Because obviously he had afternoons off and whatever with a football trainer. They just go down to Willie's club.
That club in Leicester. Gary. I suppose that, like, people, you quite often find that people who are good at sport will be good at, like, a lot of footballers are good at, like, really good golfers, like competent golfers. Quite a few, I mean, a few snooker players are good golfers as well. It's like, if you've got that aptitude for learning sports.
Which we haven't,
unfortunately.
We tried a lot of different sports, haven't we?
Yeah, we give it a go.
What have we tried?
We went golf. We went to the pitch and putt. We went to the driving range.
When we hit
the light.
We're at the driving range. I was hitting the ball up into like the metal roof.
It was so funny.
And it was like ping ponging around.
Went vertically upwards.
I'm the only golfer who has to shout four at a driving range.
Oh yeah,
it was terrible.
We only got kicked out of the driving range because of you with your antique clubs.
And also, when we went to pitch and putt in New Brighton,
yeah,
I hit it out the course, nearly hit a car over the
road. It bounced over the road.
That was a bizarre day out, wasn't it?
It was a bit weird.
You were totally hungover.
Yeah. I had a day off work.
We were knocking these balls around. There was no one else on the course.
It was a very windy day at New Brighton. And
it was a total farce.
It was. Like a jolly boys outing. Yeah, it went round New Brighton. And went for an ice cream. Do you remember? And you asked if you could have mint sauce on your ice cream.
You shout, it's not a bloody kebab. Also, when we were getting the train back, we went to get a drink from the newsagents over the road. And you were mesmerised by the merchandising in the shop window. Because it hadn't changed since about 1978.
Yeah, the shop display. He had a pack of Rennies that was so faded by the sun. And it was like the old... like typeface for Rennies. It must have been from the early 90s.
You stood there mesmerised by it, and you went to take your camera out, or your phone out to take a picture, and he came out and he looked well pissed.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because we were just stood there laughing at it.
It was pretty odd. I mean, I know New Brighton and the Wirral in general are sort of a bit behind the times, but that was ridiculous.
Yeah. It was a good day out there.
Oh, yes.
So that's it for episode 5. Thank you for listening.
We'll be back soon with more
Snooker Tales.